Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Corden. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on global warming when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, great and small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Now, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law. When they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words, it says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our Mosaic Law School. We conduct that school twice a year here live and direct in person at the law school in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, this Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of global warming. So I started off last time, I said there's 25 reasons why I'm not fighting global warming. I decided that I would quit fighting God years ago. It was a waste of time, and it's counterproductive, doesn't get me what I want to get in life. And I figured, just looking at the world the way it is right now today, that we've probably created more problems for ourselves. That is, in law we call that, you are the proximate cause of your own injury than God has caused to us or brought upon us. There was a second factor that came to my attention, and I thought, you know, a guy that's able, qualified, capable, to build a sun. You know, we got a sun out there that warms the earth. I figured, you know, a guy that's able to build something like that, make something, create something like that's probably, just probably, able to service it, take care of it, and run it. It's kind of like a Boeing 747. I just kind of figure that the company that's able to build that thing could probably service it, change the oil, can probably tell you how fast it flies and how high and tell you all about it. And for me to come in and say, you know, there's something wrong with a 747. It ought to be bigger, it ought to fly higher, it ought to fly lower, it ought to burn more, it ought to burn less fuel. What in the hell do I know about it? Let me ask you this. What in the hell does Al Gore know about global warming? What in the hell does the United Nations or any of these scientists out here know about? They're Johnny-come-latelys. They all came on the scene just like you and I did at some point in the not-too-distant past. And they've developed an opinion. They're making some measurements, and they come to a conclusion, and then their conclusion is, well, the reason for global warming is that we're burning too much fossil fuel. We're burning too much oil and too much coal. Now, it could well be true that global warming is caused by burning coal in a coal-fired power plant, or more appropriately, we're throwing some gas on the fire, and that there may be some truth to that. But let me give you another little statistic. Remember, last time I dropped a bomb on you. Now, let me drop another bomb on you. I was reading an article here not too long ago, a report in which they were talking about this volcano over in the Philippines. It's called Mount Pinatubo. I guess that's the way to pronounce that, Mount Pinatubo. Well, anyway, about 1994, 5, 6, long in there. It erupted, and it was quite an eruption, and it went on for a couple of years. We had an Air Force base over there. I think it was called Clark Air Force Base. It wiped it out. They had to abandon it. They had to give it up because it just buried it in ash. Well, anyway, the mountain blew up, and at the time that it did that, it gave off some carbon dioxide. Now, these scientists, you know, that are opposed to global warming, that are telling you we need to do something about global warming, you know, guys like Al Gore and others, And this Mount Pinatubo gave off some carbon dioxide. How much carbon dioxide did it spew into the atmosphere? See, I'm just a crummy truck driver. What the hell do I know? So I'm just a reporter reporting to you that here's how much. The report was they figured that it put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than all of the activities of mankind from the Garden of Eden until today. One eruption for 2 years put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than all of the activities, all of the coal, all of the oil, all of the wood that's ever been burned from the beginning of time to today was put into the atmosphere in just 2 years. Now listen, the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere isn't very much to start with. Let me give you the numbers here. The atmosphere is made up of mostly nitrogen, and they tell us it's 79%. That's what I learned when I was in a science class in high school, and 21% oxygen. It's about 0.5% CO2 and all other gases combined. So out of the 79-21, those are your two approximations. It isn't exactly 79-21 because that's 100%. Okay, so it's a 78-something and a 20-point-something, which then leaves a little bit of room here, and there's helium in the atmosphere, and there's carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, and there's 55 other gases that are up there, represent about 0.5%. Okay, so not very much there anyway. Now, all of the plants on the planet live off of that 0.5% of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Now, back before Noah's flood, they've taken some samples, and out of the amber, you know, amber is the resin of a tree that solidifies. It gets hard. And that amber has had ants and cockroaches and various insects trapped in it, and it makes interesting study. And there's air pockets in these amber samples. And they have tested these amber samples, and the oxygen content's 36%. So, you know, we talk a lot about, well, what about before the flood? Well, before the flood, there were giants in the earth, and they lived for 900 years. 900 years. And then people laugh, and they make fun of that. Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. And it's kind of stupid for me to sit there and say, well, that didn't happen, or it's untrue, or it's true. Hell, I wasn't there. I can't testify to those facts. It's beyond my capacity. Now, there's people running around, and they tell you that this is true or not true. I'm just a reporter. 36% oxygen prior to the flood taken from amber. Now, all the vegetation was destroyed in that pre-flood world. Now, we get our oxygen in the atmosphere from the trees. You know, all the vegetation that's growing, the grass and so on, it gives off oxygen. It takes carbon dioxide. So the plants and the animals on planet Earth have a symbiotic relationship. The plants produce the oxygen that we need for our survival, and the atmosphere today has about 21%. And then we give off carbon dioxide, and then the burning of fossil fuels produces carbon dioxide. And in experiments, you know, you take the Rodale people and other scientific organizations, they will put plants into a controlled environment, and then they will shoot in extra carbon dioxide, and guess what? The plants thrive, the plants grow, the plants do better. Hell, they've only got 0.5% of the atmosphere to breathe anyway. If we only had 0.5% of oxygen in the atmosphere, we couldn't survive. We couldn't live on an oxygen content that low. Plants can. And they can get their carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and it works pretty well. Now, since the flood, our oxygen has gone down. Now, I don't know what the carbon dioxide level was before the flood. Now, I don't have a number for that. But I'm sure that it was higher than what we have today. I'm pretty sure, because everything was higher then. I imagine that the percentages were probably about the same. Maybe it was double. Maybe it was 1%. Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And somehow or another, the world got along pretty fine. Then God decided to make a change. Then he had this big flood. And after the flood, vegetation had been wiped out. That's where we get our coal and oil today. And there was a change in the atmosphere, and it dropped to 21%, which we're getting by all right, but we're not living to be 900. We're only living to be 70 now. So, okay, I guess that's part and parcel with the plan. Now, I'm not going to change that 70-year rule. I'm not going to make you live to be 900 years old, and I'm not going to live to be 900. That was changed. I'm not going to increase the oxygen content on planet Earth to 36%. That's beyond my capacity. I'm not going to warm or cool the Earth. That's beyond my capacity. And furthermore, all of the carbon dioxide that's ever been created by the hand of man pales to insignificance when we consider one volcanic eruption. And boys and girls, I want to point out that there's more than one volcano in the world. And these volcanoes, when they blow up, they put some carbon dioxide into the air. In fact, a whole bunch of carbon dioxide into the air. So the next time you hear somebody say, the power plants and the burning of gasoline in our cars is putting carbon dioxide into the air. That's true. They're not lying to you. And then they go on and they say, well, now it's the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that's causing global warming. I think that makes as much sense as flapping your arms and flying. You know, if they were to say, look, we think global warming is being caused by sunspots, I think they'd be more on point. I don't know that that's the case. I've had some science articles here that say they think that the reason that the Earth's atmosphere is warming up and has been over the past two centuries, it started warming up in 1800. And now here we are at 2000. For 200 years, it's been warming up. We're in a warming trend. These warming trends, I'll show you here probably in the next program or two. The warming trends, they started in 800 and lasted until 1500. It lasted for 700 years. Some cases, they last for 300 years. And in some cases, they last for 700 years. Okay, if that's true, then we're in a warming trend that's been going on for 200 years. What is the maximum range of the warming trend? I don't know what it's going to be. Last time I pointed out to you, the average temperature of the world could rise by 6.3 degrees centigrade by the end of the century. That's the United Nations. That's what they said. Okay, but in the past, it has cooled by 6.3 degrees centigrade. So, okay, the world warms and the world cools. Now, to say that the activities of burning coal between 1940 and 1972, I showed you last time, is preposterous. Temperature fell between 1940 and 72, while hydrocarbon use rose by 330%. Okay, so obviously that doesn't fit. And I told you last time, I said these scientists lie a lot. And there's one scientist over here, his name is Schneider. He was quoted as saying that global warming chief proponent, Dr. Schneider, admitted he's willing to misrepresent the facts if it'll stir up the public over the correct causes. The correct causes, here's what you're supposed to believe. I reject that nonsense. That's not science, that's just propaganda. And then I showed you last time that there's a reason for the propaganda. They want a $1 per gallon gasoline surcharge tax, a carbon tax, which will amount to about $252 billion a year here in the United States. And they want to do that worldwide. That's the United Nations. I'm sitting here saying you're going to get it. You've always gotten it in the past. No reason to believe you're not going to get it again. But don't think that $252 billion now is the end of it. See, once they get the $1 enacted, then they'll raise it by 10 cents. That's 10%. That'll be $1.10. And then pretty soon they'll say, well, we still got this bad problem of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, so we'll have to give another 10 cent raise. And pretty soon it'll be $2 a gallon and $3 and $5 a gallon, just like the income tax. Started off at 0.5%, 1%, 2%, 5%. Finally, it went up to 91% during the Roosevelt years. Then they lowered it down to 42%, and I think that's about where it's at now, 42% income tax. And wasn't that just big of them? Reduced it from 91. Well, you started with zero and went to 91, then you reduced it to 42. Whew, God, boy, isn't government great? Now, last time I was reading you 25 reasons why global warming is a farce. And I was up here to about number 17. And I said the solution of expensive energy would reverse worldwide trends toward a greater affluence, decreasing birth rates, and better health. That's right. We're going to have less affluence. That's less money. And we'll have decreasing birth rates. You'll have fewer and fewer people. And you'll have better health. Now, for three, far-reaching climate predictions cannot be made. And that's where we stopped last time. Hell, we can't predict what's going to happen next week, next month, let alone what's going to happen in 100 years. But out of the United Nations and out of Dr. Schneider over here, they're giving us predictions. They're saying this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And we keep hearing that over and over again. It reminds me of Adolf Hitler, who made this observation. He actually got it from Pope Clement, Pope Innocent back in the 11th century. He said, you tell a lie often enough, over and over again, people will believe it. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. You know, after you heard it over and over again, pretty soon you can say it too, boys and girls. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. We need to go to war. We need to go to war. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. We need to go to war. We need to go to war. Iraq is the target. Iraq is the target. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. Iraq is the target. Iraq is the target. Well, pretty soon you people all got on board and you said, you know, we got weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and we need to go to war. And you did. And you're hearing global warming. Global warming. We need a carbon tax. A carbon tax to fight global warming. Global warming. We need a carbon tax. CO2 in the atmosphere causes global warming. CO2 comes from power plants. Power plants cause global warming. We need a carbon tax. And pretty soon, you're going to jump on the bandwagon and say, oh my God, we got to do something about global warming. You know, that's like pissing in the wind, you know that? And into the wind at that. That's the bottom line. Now listen, kids, you got a God out here, and he's in control. Sit back and relax. Now sometimes he's got some bad stuff on his mind. And right now, I think he's got some bad stuff on his mind. And it's called the Great Tribulation. You know, pretty soon, you know, God, you know, every now and again, he goes ballistic on us. And then he goes postal on us. And he gets real mean. And then he starts killing a lot of people. And he's been talking about this thing called the Great Tribulation, you know, for about the last, oh, shucks, 4,000 years. Well, you know, Moses, he was running things about 1,300 BC, 2,000 years after that. Yeah, about 3,000 years, Moses was writing about it, the Great Tribulation. Wrote about it in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 32. And he said, here's what I'm going to do. Now, I think we're getting down close to about that point in time, that point in history where God says, well, here's what I'm going to do. And so it looks like to me that global warming is a part of that process. But it doesn't have anything to do with burning coal or burning gasoline in your gas tank. Now, number 18, they're telling us that models to climate change do not take into account all of the potential variables, including the sun's influence. Now, read more. Now, that's another factor. Did you know that sunspots have been increasing over the last, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 years? Sunspots. I don't know what that means, but many scientists believe it's the sunspot activity that's causing the global warming. Well, then, more scientists, they believe that it's caused by the burning of fossil fuels in power plants. Okay, maybe both of them have some influence on. But the burning of coal in the power plants and the creation of CO2 is a pimple on the elephant's trunk. It reminds me of a flea crawling up an elephant's leg with rape on his mind. That's how insignificant that whole concept of CO2 is. And it borders on insanity. It's stupid at the outset and borders on insanity. Let me tell you again. Mount Pinatubo put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than all of the activities of mankind from the Garden of Eden to today. That's the flea on the elephant's trunk, or the elephant's leg with rape on its mind. Come on, guys, wake up. Number 19, global warming today is not as great as it was on two prior occasions. So within historic times, that is from 800 A.D., to 15, and then from 15 to 18, and from 18 to the present, we've had three periods of time in which we've had global warming and global cooling, global warming, global cooling, and now we're on the global warming side of the equation again. And so far, the global warming has not been as great as it was the last two times. And the last two times when we had global warming on planet Earth, it did not spell doom to the inhabitants of planet Earth. Nobody had thunk up a carbon tax. You know, I guess if old King John had thought of it, he'd probably imposed it. In the early part of the second millennium, some 800 to 1,000 years ago, temperatures on Earth were higher than they are today. Now, 800 to 1,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago was about 1,000 to 1,200. The temperature on planet Earth between the years 1,000 and 1,200 were higher than they are today. And you can rest assured that the Arctic Ocean was having longer summers and warmer winters. And the Eskimos living up there were probably shaking their heads saying, oh, my God, what's going on here? Like they are today. I was watching Katie Couric the other day, and they were talking to some Eskimos up there, and the Eskimos said, oh, my God, we just don't know what all this means. Well, yeah, I can understand that. When you're talking about 200-300 years of time frame, you're talking about warmer temperatures and less ice. Yeah, it's different, and it's a change. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we need to pay a dollar a gallon more for gasoline or give the money to Al Gore so he can go out here and I don't know what the hell they're planning on doing. Close down the power plant so you can live on less electricity. Take away half your gasoline so you can't drive as far. Number 20. How about the sun's energy? The sun's energy output. By looking at tree rings, the sun's energy output can be evaluated back as far as 10,000 years. Well, that's BS. The world only goes back 6,000 years, kids. And this 10,000, 50 million, 2 billion years ago is horse pucky. Horse pucky. And hell, we'd do better with horse manure than with the crap that comes out of science. Well, you know, half of it. Number 21. But here's the point. We can measure it by tree rings. Now, there is some real science out there. I'm not debunking science. But, you know, when science starts offering their opinion, that's not science. That's propaganda. And our problem is that we're unable to distinguish between the science and the propaganda. Especially when you got a scientist that says, well, I'm willing to lie if that's what I need to do to convince you that I'm right. Number 21, the ups and downs of temperatures on the Earth match exactly the ups and downs and changes in the magnetism and energy output of the sun. Number 22, nobody wants to hear that global warming is not caused by humans. It doesn't sell. Nobody wants to hear global warming is not caused by humans. I'll tell you who's causing it. It's the creator of the universe. That's the guy that's causing global warming. That guy is in control of the universe. He calls the Earth his footstool. He's got a plan that he's working out here on planet Earth, and you're a part of it. So am I and everybody else. George Bush, he's a part of it, and Dick Cheney, Saddam Hussein, and we're all actors on the world stage. And when this thing is all over and done with, 30,000 years from now, we can come back to our class reunion and say, well, you know, what do you think, Bob? What have you been doing over the past 30,000 years? Number 23, most of the warming that occurred on the planet in this century occurred before the greenhouse gases by human activities were added to the equation. Listen to that again. Most of the warming that has occurred on the planet in this century occurred before the greenhouse gases. Before. Between 1900 and 1950. Number 24, unsettled science. Predictions of an acceleration of increased temperatures are exaggerated. It's just pure hypothesis. For anybody to say that the temperature on planet Earth is going to rise or fall over the next 100 years is the equivalent of the weatherman saying there's a 50% chance of rain tomorrow. I mean, hell, you can't be wrong. There is a chance that the temperature is going to rise by another 6 degrees over the next 100 years. Hell, I don't deny it. Yeah, there's that chance. It could happen. But there isn't anybody out there short of God Almighty himself who's the only guy around here that's got the power to actually do it if he so desires. I can't increase the Earth's temperature. I can't decrease the Earth's temperature, and neither can you, and neither can Al Gore, and neither can all of the scientists, and all of the king's horses, and all of the king's men combined can't do it. And then number 25, the fact that we stop emitting carbon dioxide will do nothing to change the course of the climate. If we didn't emit one more particle of carbon dioxide, mankind stops altogether. It isn't going to change the climate one iota. The next volcano that blows up is going to put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than all of the activities of mankind combined for 6,000 years. That's how insignificant the CO2 that we're putting into the atmosphere today is. It is true we're putting in a lot more than we ever put into the atmosphere before. So what? You know, 100% more of 0.1% is 0.2%. Boys and girls, the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere is only 0.5%. If you doubled that to 1%, it wouldn't be significant. It would probably be real significant to the plants, but it isn't going to be significant to you and me. And it isn't going to be significant to the climate. All right, now there's 25 reasons why you don't need to be real concerned about it. Now let's get into the nitty-gritty, and I got to tell you, the nitty-gritty, so that we can satisfy all the government bureaucrats around the world and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Our website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. I'd like to give you a citation here on this last report, but I don't see one. Let me see what I can do here. His last words here are, he says, we take care of the environment because it's the right thing to do, not because we're scared into or lied to or given outright false information. The world is our home, and we care for our home, and we treat it with respect because it's where we live and where our children will live and their children. We do not fight global warming because it is futile to do so. We do, however, conserve, recycle, treat our environment with respect, show honest stewardship of our planet and resources, and generally just plain don't waste any more than we absolutely have to because we can, because it's the right thing to do in every area of our life. Fight global warming, not me. pretty good article there, but I don't know who wrote it. Now, there's some other neat articles here, about 10 or 15 of them. Global Warming Awareness Blog. So if you wanted to go to Global Warming Awareness Blog, there's a guy by the name of Professor Syun-ICHI. I won't try to pronounce that. And his last name is A-K-A-S-O-F-U. A-K-A-S-O-F-U. I understand F-U, but I'm not quite sure that that's what he meant by that. Let's see where this came from. Oh, yeah. And this comes from Wikipedia.org, talking about the 1500-year climate cycle. So we went to Wikipedia on the Internet. 1500-year climate cycle. In 1300 A.D., the start of the Little Ice Age, by some calculations, the Great Famine of 1315 to 1317. Looking backward from the present, the following events appear to conform to a general 1500-year pattern. Evidence is more problematic and certainly weaker further back in time. From Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, the existence of climatic changes, possibly on a quasi-1500-year cycle, is well established for the last glacial period from the ice cores. Less well established is the continuation of these cycles into the Holocene, H-O-L-O-C-E-N-E. I haven't got a clue as to what a Holocene is. More controversially, let me try that one again. More controversially, some global warming skeptics have used the 1500-year climate cycle to argue against current anthropogenic global warming, but the hypothesis itself exists independent of political considerations. One leading researcher in this area has been Dr. Gerald C. Bond of the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University. One publication outlining this view was the November 1997 article, A Pervasive Millennial Scale Cycle in North Atlantic Holocene and Glacial Climates, published in the journal Science and authored by 10 climatologists and climate modelers, where they argue for a 1500-year climate cycle in the North Atlantic region, and in their view, many if not most of the Dansgaard Austere events of the last ice age conform to a 1500-year pattern, as do some climate events of later eras, like the Little Ice Age, the 8.2-kilo-year event, and the start of the Younger Dryas, D-R-Y-A-S, whatever that is. Later proponents of this view include S. Fred Singer of the University of Virginia and Dennis Avery of the Hudson Institute. This hypothesis holds that the 1500-year cycle displays nonlinear behavior and stochastic resonance, whatever stochastic resonance is. Not every instance of the pattern is a significant climate event, though some rise to major prominence in environmental history. Causes and determining factors of the cycle are under study. Researchers have focused attention on patterns of tides, variations of solar output, and the reorganization of atmospheric circulation. Looking backward from the present, the following events appear to conform to a general 1500-year pattern. Evidence is more problematic and certainly weaker the further back in time you go. And they start with 1300 AD, they go back to 200 BC, 1700 BC, 3200 BC, 4700 BC. And then they go back as far as 12200 BC, and that's why this is a hypothesis, because after, 4700 BC, these people have their heads right square up the middle of their rectal region. Now that's my opinion. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is that here's a group of scientists that say, well, what's going on here today has been going on for the last at least 1,500 years. Probably goes back 12,000 years, but we can observe it for 1,500. So I'm sitting here saying this is called Wikipedia.org, Global Warming Awareness Blog. So there's people out here that are watching global warming. There's even a blog out here giving us a report. And I guess that's the site that you're going to go to. I don't see anything else down here at the bottom. All right. Five good arguments why global warming is not due to man-made carbon dioxide. Current studies show proof that current rise in temperature on Earth is not due to the man-made carbon dioxide in the air causing the greenhouse effect, and many credible scientists support this claim. I do believe in global warming, but I don't believe that humans, CO2, is causing that warming. Professor Tim Ball, Department of Climatology, University of Winnipeg. All right. Well, now there's 50 other scientists out there that will all tell you, oh, yeah, we think that it is. Okay, well, that's not science. That's opinion. Now, this guy says, I don't think. I don't believe. Okay, well, I don't believe is his opinion. And I'm giving you my opinion. I don't believe it either. Now, the evidence that I'm citing, point by point, is that the story that we're being told by Katie Couric and Brian Williams on the CBS and the NBC Evening News, with, you know, with all of their good intentions, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, they got good intentions. It's a story. They need to cover the story. And they're sending correspondents down to Antarctica. Now, they had a woman that they sent down to Antarctica, and she's running around out here with her parka on, and she's describing, you know, how cold it is down there, and how the icebergs are breaking off, and how the ice is receding. Okay, well, let's assume that that's a fact. I pointed out to you last time, hell, all of the fresh water on planet Earth only represents 1% of the water on the planet. Now, I'm not too smart, but I figure it this way. If you took all the fresh water on the planet, which is someplace other than in the ocean, is that about right? Can we all agree on that? All of the fresh water on this planet Earth is not in the ocean. It's someplace else. Because if it was in the ocean, it wouldn't be fresh water, would it? All right, Tom. And so all of the fresh water on the planet doesn't really amount to very much. You know, you got all of the Great Lakes, and you got all of the ice caps and all the rest of it. I mean, it ain't very much water. So if it's 1% and we melted it all and dumped it into the ocean, it should raise the ocean levels by 1%. Shouldn't it? I'm not even sure that it would raise it 1%, but it sure so wouldn't be over that. So we've had this happen in the past, and the temperatures have been higher in the past. We've had greater melting of the ice caps in the past than we have today. The ice caps that are on Greenland today, let me back you up. Do you know why Greenland is called Greenland instead of White Land? Think about that for a minute. It's called Greenland. It was founded by a guy named Leif Erikson about 1300 AD, which is right in the middle of the last great warming trend. Or maybe it was found a little bit earlier than that. I kind of forget now. It might have been 1100, come think of it. Iceland, their history goes back, I think, around 1100 AD, maybe a little bit earlier than that. Anyway, it was the Vikings coming over here to Newfoundland. They called that Newfoundland. They passed by Greenland. It was green. That's why they called it Greenland. And when they got to Iceland, they called it Iceland. It was full ice. They looked at it. It's full ice today, too. That's why they call it Iceland, Greenland, instead of White Land. All right. Instead, I pass that one on to you. Now, argument one, there were periods of time with temperatures higher than today where there were lower amounts of man-made carbon dioxide. There were two periods in time where temperature were way higher than today's temperatures, and this was during the medieval warm period in the 1500s and during the Holocene maximum in 6000 BC. During this period, there was nearly no man-made machinery that gives of carbon dioxide from the burning of fuel, and yet the temperatures during this period were way higher than they were today. I don't care much for his 6,000 year BC. I think he's whistling Dixie there, but at least in the 1500s, you know, that was 500 years ago. You know, there are historical records 500 years ago. Yeah. Temperatures were higher than temperatures today in the medieval warm period. Temperatures were even higher for thousands of years in the Holocene maximum. And anyone who goes around and says that carbon dioxide is responsible for most of the warming of the 20th century has not looked at the basic numbers. So says Professor Patrick Michaels, Department of Environmental Sciences, University of Virginia. Argument number two. In history, the economic boom and industrialization after the Second World War and the increase in CO2 productions, but there was a global temperature drop. And I reported that to you last time, that from 1940 to 72 in that 32-year period, the average worldwide temperature actually dropped at the same time. Same time that we increased carbon dioxide emissions by 330%. After the Second World War, after 1945, industrialization took place, increasing man-made machines, producing large amounts of CO2 from then forward. And yet global temperature started to drop from 1940 for more than three decades. This thus proves that global warming is not related to the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. During the economic boom, man-made CO2 increased, but there was a temperature drop for four decades. CO2 began to increase exponentially in about 1940, but the temperature began to decrease in 1940, and it continued until 1975. So this is an approximate relation, when CO2 increasing rapidly, and yet the temperature decreasing, then we cannot say that CO2 and temperature go together. And that's Dr. Director, Internal Arctic Research Group. Temperature went up significantly up to 1940. Then human production of CO2 was relatively low. And then in the post-war years, when the industries and all the economies in the world really got cranked up and human production of CO2 soared, the global temperature was going down. In other words, the facts did not fit the theory. So says Professor Tim Ball, Department of Climatology, University of Winnipeg. Argument number three. Human-made CO2 is not causing global warming, since man-made carbon dioxide is not the main source of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
95% of the world's greenhouse gases is mostly water vapor, and it is the most important greenhouse gas. Without the planet, we'll be too cold that no one can survive. Among the 5% of the rest of the greenhouse gases, only a small percent of it is carbon dioxide, only 10 parts per million, and this gas has only 0.054% of all gases. With all of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, CO2 made by humans is a minute amount compared to all of the sources of CO2 in the atmosphere. A single volcano emits carbon dioxide more than all of the factories and man-made machinery from all over. The animals and decaying vegetation gives off CO2, which is a gas produced by all living things and produces more than 150 gigatons each year, as humans produce about 6.5 gigatons per year. All right. Now that was number three. Let's get our numbers in perspective. Remember I told you that volcano, Mount Pinatubo, put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than all of the activities of mankind combined from the Garden of Eden until today. Well, until 1995. When the thing was blown up. Argument number three, these volcanoes go off all the time. And they've actually, I don't know how much a gigaton is. I hear my boy talking about gigabytes. And you know, these guys are talking in numbers that the hell I couldn't count up if I took my shoes off. But I can read 6.5. Now, whatever a gigaton is, it could be a ton, it could be 5,000 tons, it could be a million tons or 50, I don't know. But it's 6.5 compared to, let's draw a line, 150. Now, let me use my Texas Instrument calculator over here. Let's see what percentage that is. 6.5 divided by 150. So mankind produces approximately 4% of the CO2 that's going into the atmosphere every year. Now, there's a thing called biomass out here. In fact, there's a good article in the Acres USA paper. It's the March 2008 issue of Acres USA. I mean, these guys at Acres, they just have scads and scads and oodles of information. It says soil life and carbon, answers to global warming in our root cellar. That's argument number three. Human-made CO2 is not causing global warming since man-made carbon dioxide is not the main source of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The main source is plants. The plants, when they rot, when they die and rot, they put 150 units into the atmosphere. Mankind burn all the coal in his hands on, only puts in 6.5. And that doesn't count. We're not even talking about the volcanoes, where one volcanic eruption puts in more than all of the activities of mankind. And they're coming to us telling us that global warming is caused by burning coal in a power plant? Come on, children, let's wake up and smell the coffee. Argument four. Ice core records used by many global warming activists and some politicians that show the global temperature and CO2 correlate is misleading. And although it is correct to say the amount of CO2 in the air and global temperature show a relation, it is not correct to say that the amount of CO2 is causing the rise in temperature. In fact, it is the other way around. You cannot say that CO2 can drive climate. It certainly did not in the past. CO2 clearly cannot be causing temperature changes. It is a product of temperature. It's following temperature changes. What the guy's telling you here is that the CO2 doesn't cause the temperature change. The temperature change causes the CO2. It is true, there's a relationship, but it's exactly the opposite from what they're telling us. And that's Professor Ian Clark, Department of Earth Science, University of Ottawa. Professor Ian Clark is a leading archaeological climatologist, and with his study has shown that in looking in the amounts of CO2 in the ice core records, with the increase in temperature, there's also an increase in carbon dioxide. But the increase is hundreds of years behind. In fact, it's 800 years behind, and that's what they're not telling you. And although there is a correlation between temperature and CO2, it's not CO2 causing an increase in temperature. It is increasing temperatures that increases CO2 and is several hundred years delayed. And then argument number five, the layer of the atmosphere where greenhouse gases are found do not have any significant increase in temperature. As a whole, global warming theory of the greenhouse effect goes, IR rays hit the surface of the Earth and go back to the layer of greenhouse gases in the troposphere, and then temperature should be significantly higher in this area. This area is 10,000 to 12,000 kilometers in the atmosphere. Both satellite data and weather balloon data show no such dramatic change in temperature. This proves that it is not even greenhouse gases that are causing the global warming. How much more is it from CO2? These direct quotes of the mentioned professors are in the documentary The Great Global Warming Swindle, featured here on global warming awareness in 2007. So there's a publication here called The Great Global Warming Swindle. Now, Acres, in their Soil Life and Carbon article on page 20, which is in the March 2008 issue, cost you $5 to get a copy of it, cost you $27 to subscribe. Spend the $27, $37 if you're overseas. And get to Acres USA, because they're just full of neat stories like this, and they point out that the biomass is where most of the CO2 comes from. Remember, a living plant gives off oxygen. That's what we need to breathe. When the plant dies, it decays, and when it decays, it gives off carbon dioxide. All right, so that tells you that part of the story. Next time, we'll take up medieval warm period. Remember, we were talking about that a little earlier, that during the medieval period, that was about 800 to about 1800, about 1,000 years, there is a period where the temperature went up, it went down, it went up, it went down. This is the global average. Now, they're able to do that. They take a look at trees, and there's a number of trees that live for several hundred years. Olive trees are one, bristlecone pines are another, and it tells quite a bit. It tells quite a little story. And then we'll take a look at that story next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Let me give you a little piece of information here on Acres USA, in case you missed it the last program. They've got a telephone number down there. It's 512-892-4400. That's 512-892-4400. That's Acres USA. They're down in Austin, Texas. All right, now take care of Austin, Texas. And next time we'll be talking about Wikipedia. That's where most of these articles came from, right out of the encyclopedia, for crying out loud. All right, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.